Bible reading this evening is in 1 Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 1 through 11. Not sure of some of the words of how to pronounce them, but we'll start with there. Now the Philistines gathered to battle and were gathered together at Shechem, which belonged to Judah, and pitched between Shechem and Azekah and Ephes-Damon. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on mountain on one side and Israel on the mountain on the other side. And there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span, and he had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. And he had graves of brass upon his legs, and a target of brass between his shoulders. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, Why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am I not a Philistine? And you servants to Saul, choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. And if he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. And when Saul and all of Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. That's First Samuel chapter 17, verses 1 through 11.
The reading of this text, we see the difficulty that King Saul's army was in. King Saul is in a face-off with the Philistines. The numbers of the Philistines were behind a man, as we read in this text, whose name was Goliath. I know that some of you who are younger are studying about Goliath and young David, and how that young David slew the giant Philistine. To get a picture in our minds of just how big this man was, those of you who are in the little ones' classes, you might want to call your attention to the clock on the wall, or perhaps the exit sign, and see just about how tall this man was. No offense intended, Chris, but he was about 3 feet taller than Mr. Chris. He was a big man. This man's armor weighed a whole lot. This man's javelin was great big. Now, I know those are very general terms, but I want you to see, those of you who are younger, that as a young person, how hard that would be to face somebody that big, especially as a man who is a young man that has really never been in this kind of battle before. And now he's fighting against a man who is not only that large, but well-schooled and well-practiced in the use of armor and in the use of various weapons. And this is the man that has the whole nation of Israel standing in awe because no one is willing to fight him. Now picture that in your mind as we read a little bit more in this text. In verse 16, it says, And the Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. Again, see the challenge. Any of you willing to come and fight against me, just come on. And if you can win, we'll be your slaves. If I win, you'll be mine. And doing that morning and night for 40 days. And then you'll notice in verse 31, it says, And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said unto Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth. And he is a man of war from his youth. And David said unto Saul, thy servant was keeping his father's sheep, and when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by the beard and smote him and slew him. Now here's a young man keeping sheep. And when a lion came in opposition to his sheep and attacked David, David said, I took him by the beard and I killed him. Now that would be a task for any of us. I wouldn't want to face that. And as you read on in the text, it says in verse 36, thy servant smote both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. And David said, Jehovah that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, go, and Jehovah shall be with thee. And Saul clad David with his apparel, and he put a helmet of brass upon his head, and he clad him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his apparel, and he said to go, for he had not proved it. And David said to Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off him. And he took his staff in his hand and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had even in his wallet, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. Now, what do you think's about to happen? Well, you've studied the story. You know what's about to happen. And you know how that David approached the Philistine and how that the Philistine made fun of young David. In verse 41, it tells us that the Philistine came and drew near unto David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, and ruddy, and withal of fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the birds of the heavens and unto the beast of the field. Then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to thee in the name of Jehovah of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will Jehovah deliver thee into my hand, and I will smite thee and take thy head from off thee. And I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day unto the birds of the heavens and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that Jehovah saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is Jehovah's, and he will give you into our hand. Caitlin and I were talking about this just the other day. And I said, how did David kill this Philistine? Well, she understood that hit him in the head with a rock thrown by a slingshot. Yes. And then he cut off his head. I said, where did David get a sword? She said, he took it from the giant. And that's right. But look at the confidence that David had. He knew that God would deliver this man into the hand of the Israelites. Now, notice Saul's statement. Thou art but a youth. You can't do this. You're just a young person. You can't do this. You know, one of the things that impresses me is the task that some young people have to face, the challenges that are often faced, and the grit wherewith they make those decisions. Often we look at old people, and we admire them for the lives that they've lived, the accomplishments that have characterized their lives, But sometimes we need to look at the lives of young people and see what they've accomplished. David was able, even though he was a youth, to deliver the nation of Israel from the armies of the Philistines because he had the courage not only to face Goliath, but the confidence in God to defend his people. Nobody else in Israel had that kind of courage or confidence, but David did. God used this young man to deliver the people of Israel from the Philistines. There are other young people that I want you to study with me for just a moment in the Scriptures that accomplished great things. And God had purpose for them and used them to accomplish His end. In the book of Genesis, in the 37th chapter of the book of Genesis, none of these will be new to, to most of you, but we read of young Joseph in Genesis chapter 37, how that he had a dream. And in the dream, sheaves bowed down before another, or several sheaves bowed down before one sheave. And in verse 9, we see that he dreamed about planets. And behold, the sun and the moon and 11 stars made obeisance to me. Now these dreams upset his brothers to the extent that they declared, "Shall we bow down to you?" But Joseph's father, in verse 11, kept these sayings in mind. As we begin to read about young Joseph, in the text of chapter 37, it tells us that he was 17 years old. Some of you in the audience this evening are not far from 17. So you can associate with how young Joseph, how old he was. 17 years old. And he is sent by his father to check on his brothers as they were herding sheep. And his brothers hated him. And they sold him to a caravan of traders that were going toward Egypt. 17 years old. And Joseph became a slave in Potiphar's house. 17 years old, and now he's a slave. Well, that would not be an easy circumstance for a young person to be in. And it would certainly not be an easy circumstance for him to continually be faced by Potiphar's wife trying to seduce him to commit fornication with her. But the text tells us that Joseph said, "How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" Chapter 39, verse 9. A young man refusing the temptations of another man's wife, even to the extent as Joseph was, as Potiphar's wife lied about Joseph, then he was placed in prison. How would you like to begin your life, young people, as a 17-year-old slave now placed in prison? That was Joseph. And Joseph continued to make wise choices, even to the extent that eventually Joseph became the one that God selected to deliver the nation of Israel during the time of the famine. Here's another young person that I want you to be impressed with, and that is young Josiah. Josiah was probably one of, if not the best king that the people of Judah ever had. It would probably be a toss-up between Josiah and Hezekiah. But as you'll read about young Josiah, let's see how old he was when he started out. In 2 Chronicles chapter 34, 2 Chronicles chapter 34, if you would begin reading with me in verse 1, it says, "Josiah was 8 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 31 years in Jerusalem." Can you imagine being king at 8? Josiah was. But Josiah was a very good king. In verse 2, he did that which was right in the eyes of Jehovah, and walked in the ways of David his father, and turned not aside to the right hand or to the left. For in the 8th year of his reign, that would make him 16. Again, some of you in the audience this evening are not far from 16. Some of you might be 16. But here is young Josiah, who's been king of the people of God now for 8 years. He's 16 years old. And he began to seek after the God of David, his father. Verse 3 continues, "And in the 12th year, he began to purge Judah and Jerusalem from the high places and the Asherim and the graven images and the molten images." Let's pause right there. It tells us that we're reading about young Josiah in the 12th year of his reign. That would make him about 20 years old. You see, I can relate to that. I was 20 when I got married. That puts me on a timeline, you see. I can't imagine being king of a nation at 20 years old, and Josiah was at 8. But at 20 years old, he began to tear down the idolatrous altars where they had been worshipped. And he began to restore worship unto God throughout all the nation of God's people. And as you'll read on in these verses, in verse 8, it says, "Now in the 18th year of his reign, when he had purged the land of the house, he sent Shaphan the son of Azaliah, and Maaseiah the governor of the city, and Joash the son of Jehoaz, the recorder, to repair the house of Jehovah his God." Now here is a young man who sees that the people of God have not only been introduced to the worship of idols, but they're practicing that in the land. They built altars to the worship of these idols, offered sacrifices to these things. And young Josiah tears all that down. And he sends repairmen to repair the temple of God. Now, do you think you could do that at 16, 18, 20, 26 years old? Josiah is a young man to be admired. Josiah was a responsible young fella, and he understood the things that are right. You've studied, no doubt, about Daniel. How that Daniel was taken captive of the people of Judah and taken into the land of Babylon. And in Daniel chapter 1, read with me beginning at verse 3. It tells us, "And the king spoke unto Epinez, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring in certain of the children of Israel, even of the seed royal and of the nobles, youths, in whom was no blemish but well favored, and skillful in all wisdom, and endued with knowledge, and understanding science, such as had ability to stand in the king's palace, and that he should teach them the learning of the tongue of the Chaldeans." Now picture this. Here's one of the servants of the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, who has taken the people of God captive. And the king said, "I want you to bring me some young men that are smart. I want them to be good-looking young men, healthy and wise, and teach them the language of the Babylonians." And so young Daniel was brought, and Hananiah, and Mishael, and Azariah, that's their Hebrew names. You would recognize them as Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But how old was young Daniel? Some have suggested that he was in the neighborhood of 15 to 18 years old when he was brought to King Nebuchadnezzar and began serving him as his counselor. Here is a young man, perhaps upper teens, that's giving counsel to the king that has just conquered everybody. That's young Daniel. And young Daniel in chapter 1, in verse 18, the text tells us, "And at the end of the days which the king had appointed for bringing them in, the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar," that is Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Daniel. "And the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king, and in every matter of wisdom and understanding concerning which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all his realms. And Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus." Now, out of the captives that were taken, these four, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, proved themselves to be smarter, wiser, in all of the wisdom of the Babylonians 10 times over. You can't help but admire these young captives from the land of Judah. As we come to the New Testament, we want to notice some things about Timothy. Some of you and I have been studying in the book of Acts, and we've talked about Paul's first acquaintance with Timothy in Acts chapter 16. Acts chapter 16, beginning in verse 1. It tells us that Paul came also to Derbe and to Lystra, and behold, a certain disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a Jewess that believed, but his father was a Greek. The same was well reported of by the brethren that were at Lystra and Iconium. Him would Paul have to go forth with him, and he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews that were in those parts, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. Now, let's talk just a little bit about Timothy. We know in 2 Timothy chapter 3, beginning about verse 15, that young Timothy had been taught the Scriptures from his youth up. We know in 1 Timothy chapter 1 that young Timothy had been taught by his, or 2 Timothy chapter 1, by his mother and his grandmother. There's also evidence that the Apostle Paul had had a hand in the conversion of young Timothy. But in Acts the 16th chapter, look at the report about this young man. It tells us in Acts chapter 16 that he is well reported of by the brethren that were at Lystra and Iconium. Timothy had a good reputation among those who were Christians in these two cities. Now, young person, would you like to have a reputation like Timothy? Among brethren, that you're sound, you have a reputation for being good, you have a reputation for knowledge, a reputation for consistency in your practice, a reputation for practicing morality, that you're an example of a young Christian. Now that's what Timothy was. Later we know, in fact about 20 years later, the Apostle Paul, writing to this young preacher, told him, "Let no man despise thy youth." Now you put that on the timeline, we've got about Acts 16, about 20 years before that. So how old was Timothy when Paul is speaking of him, or Luke records these words in Acts chapter 16? Well, he was a very young person. I don't know exactly how old, but he was a young person, because in 1 Timothy 4, Paul said, "Let no man despise thy youth," and that's 20 years down the pike. You see, a fellow that's 20 and much older can still be called a young man. And so was Timothy. Thou art but a youth. What does that mean to you? Does that mean you can't make an impression on somebody's life? Does that mean you can't do anything that will cause somebody to change the way they think? Or does that mean you can't do anything to save someone's soul? Well, of course not. Thou art but a youth, Saul said to David. But David delivered the Israelites from the Philistines. Well, what kind of person then can God use? God needs people like Joseph. Joseph had the courage. He had been taught something and was determined to live a godly, moral life. That's how he could resist the temptations of Potiphar's wife. Now, we talk about marriage and the duration of marriage, the permanency of marriage. When Potiphar's wife tempted young Joseph to commit sin with her, why do you think that Joseph fled and got him out? Joseph knew here was a place he didn't need to be. How did he know that, friend? Somebody had taught him something. He knew something about morality. He knew something about the permanency of marriage. And you need to know something about that so that you can make wise choices like Joseph did. You see, because you're a young person does not mean you have to do everything that other young people do. As Paul was writing to young Timothy, he told that young preacher in 2 Timothy chapter 2, "Flee fornication." Well, that's what Joseph did. You see, Timothy needed to know something about that too, didn't he? And remember that Timothy was a gospel preacher preaching in the city of Ephesus. Now, if you want to know something about what the Ephesians practiced, go back to Acts chapter 19 and you can read about that. But in that kind of an evil environment, Timothy would face temptation, wouldn't he? And Paul said to young Timothy, a preacher of the gospel, you flee fornication. What kind of person does God need? He needs somebody that will trust him. Do you believe what God said? A lot of young people just don't believe what God said. Either that or don't know what God says, but manifest a lack of trust. Turn back, if you will, to 1 Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17. In this text, it tells us in verse 37. Verse 37. David said, Jehovah that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. David trusts God. He believes what God has said. You'll notice, in fact, later that David wrote in 2 Samuel, or said in 2 Samuel 22, as for God, his way is perfect. The word of Jehovah is tried. He is a shield unto all them that take refuge in him. David believed that, do you? Now, young people, we have to decide these things. Did you notice that we I put in there? We have to consider those things. Do you believe what God said? Will He be a shield to you? What kind of young people? Those willing to seek the Lord with humility. Josiah, as we mentioned him as being among the best kings that Israel or that Judah ever had. As you turn over to 2 Chronicles once again, into chapter 34, and note verse 3. 2 Chronicles chapter 34, verse 3. For in the eighth year of his reign, while he was yet young, he began to seek after the God of his father, or of David his father. And in the 12th year, he began to purge Judah and Jerusalem from the high places, and the Asherim, and the graven images, and the molten images. We'll pause there, but just observe, if you would please, the number of the things that young Josiah had to destroy. Josiah expresses a willingness at this very early age of humility. We're going to take care of this, and we're going to seek God. In verse 26, beginning of chapter 34, the text continues, But unto the king of Judah, who sent you to inquire of Jehovah, thus shall ye say to him, Thus saith Jehovah the God of Israel, as touching the words which thou hast heard, because thy heart was tender, and thou didst humble thyself before God, when thou heardest his words against this place, and against the inhabitants thereof, and hast humbled thyself before me, and hast rent thy clothes, and wept before me. I also have heard thee, saith Jehovah. What are we reading about? We're reading about God's words concerning this young king. He's a humble man. He cried unto God on behalf of these people, and God heard him. God needs and uses people like that. Those willing to be true to their convictions, going back to Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You will recall that Daniel would not compromise his convictions on the food that he was to eat. As a young Jew, there were certain dietary restrictions that he lived by. And when the king, Nebuchadnezzar, commanded him to betray that, he said, I won't do it. Just won't do it. And then when the decree was given that whoever asked anything of anybody except the king, Daniel, knowing that, as was his common practice, knowing that his window was open toward Jerusalem, he continued to pray just as he always had. And you know then that it was Daniel that the king took and threw him in the lion's den. But Daniel was convicted. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the third chapter were commanded that at the sound of various musical instruments, you are to bow down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said, won't do it. Why? Well, we can't worship that golden image. We can't do that. And Nebuchadnezzar said, who is the God that will deliver you? And these young men said, Jehovah will deliver us. And if he don't, we still won't bow down and worship your God. Won't do it. Now, young people, do you have that kind of commitment? Knowing that the consequence might be persecution, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the threat was to be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. What an awful way to be tormented. But they said, we won't do it. God has a place for young people like that. I admire young people who face difficult circumstances and awful consequences but are willing to stand for what they believe to be right. And we need to do that. Now, what responsibility do we have, those of us who are older, growing older, toward such young people? Well, in Matthew, the 18th chapter, Jesus said, beginning in verse 5, "Whoso shall receive one such little child in my name receiveth me. But whoso shall cause one of these little ones that believe on me to stumble, it is profitable for him that a great millstone should be hanged about his neck, and that he should be sunk in the depths of the sea." That's a shame, isn't it? To take somebody that's a young person, that's trying to do what's right, and just discourage them to the point they quit. Something's wrong with that. There was a young fellow many years ago who had not been a Christian very long, and he had noticed that some of the other men who waited on the Lord's table made a comment or so about what the purpose of this is. And he was asked to wait on the table. And he thought that he would make a comment about the purpose of this. And something he said was not exactly on target. But a gospel preacher friend of mine who was there in a meeting noticed that as this young fellow was going out the door, an older gentleman gave him a good combing and told him what he had said that was not right, and told him that if he didn't have any more sense than to make a statement like that, he needed to shut up and not say anything. The young man said, "That won't happen again, because I won't be doing that anymore." The gospel preacher, old wise fellow, asked the gentleman who had made such remarks to that young man, he said, "How long do you think he's been a Christian?" He said, "Oh, about 3 months." He said, "How long have you been a Christian?" He said, "Oh, about 30 years. The old preacher told him, "Be patient with the boy. Help him to learn. Encourage him. So that when he's been a Christian for 30 years, he won't make the mistake you just made." Now you think about that, beloved. "Whoso," Jesus said, "causes one of these to stumble, better that a great millstone be hanged about his neck and he be cast into the midst of the sea." Don't discourage them. Help them to grow. Instruct, but do so with kindness and help them to learn. As Paul said to Timothy, "Let no man despise thy youth." Now we look upon that and say, well, this was a responsibility that was given to Timothy. That's right. Timothy was to be an example to these people. But yet, beloved, what is our attitude to be toward young people? Is it to despise them because they're young? No, sir. No, sir. Now, as we read in the text of Luke, the second chapter, we see that Jesus was not an old man when he was standing in the temple talking to the leaders of the nation of Israel about those things that pertain to what they taught to the people. In Luke chapter 2, read beginning with me at verse 41. Luke chapter 2, verse 41. There the text tells us, "And his parents went every year to Jerusalem at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up after the custom of the feast, and when they had fulfilled the days and as they were returning, the boy, Jesus, tarried behind in Jerusalem, and his parents knew it not. But supposing him to be in the company, they went a day's journey, and they sought for him among the kinfolk and acquaintance. And when they found him not, they returned to Jerusalem, seeking for him. And it came to pass, after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both hearing them and asking them questions, and all that heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. And when they saw him, they were astonished, and his mother said unto him, Son, why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I sought thee sorrowing. And he said unto them, How is it that ye sought me? Knew ye not that I must be in my Father's house? And they understood not the saying which he spake unto them. Well, we'll pause there. Know ye not that I must be in my Father's house? Some accounts of this says my Father's business. Now, friend, how old was Jesus? He was 12. 12. Some of you have already passed that benchmark. But he was 12 years old. And he astounded those who were teachers in the temple. Young people, you can do a whole lot. Don't ever discredit yourself, but prepare yourself. There's much you can do. Don't become arrogant. Don't think that this lesson is to pat you on the back and everything you decide to do. That's not the case. But it is to note that there are some great accomplishments by young people, and you can be one of them if you apply yourself, like these that we've talked about tonight, like young David, who was willing to have confidence in God and face Goliath, the Philistine. You've listened patiently to the things I wanted to say to you about these young characters. But maybe I'm talking to someone in the audience this evening whose conscience is tender, and you know that you need to do something about your spiritual condition. You see, it's not just a matter of doing something. You need to do the thing that is right. You need to believe that Jesus is the Christ, and the reason for that is Jesus said, "For except you believe that I am He, ye shall die in your sins." You see, that's not mixed opinion. That's what the Lord said. Jesus said, "May I tell you, except ye repent, ye shall all in like manner perish." That's not my opinion. You can read that in Luke 13:3. Jesus said, "We must confess our faith, or He will deny us before His Father." You can read that too in Matthew chapter 10, verses 32 and 33. And it was Jesus that said, "He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved." It was the Apostle Peter who preached that message to those Jews who asked, "What shall we do?" And he said, "Repent ye and be baptized, every one of you, in the name of Jesus Christ for the remission of your sins." Now that's what the Lord requires of you. Suppose you've done that, and as I sometimes use the expression, you've messed up. Perhaps the circumstance is more serious. You've committed sin. You'll be lost. You've got to correct that. You just have to, or else you'll face God, and you'll face eternity with it. If we can help you, please come to the front while together we stand and sing this song.
cause me.